soulful, spiritual, strong, thoughtful, trustworthy, virtuous, wild, and zen. Inspo action. Which five qualities, whether from the ones that I've just mentioned or ones that you've come up with yourself, are most important to you as a person? Whip out your journal, and if five don't immediately come to you, write down all the ones that resonate. Then halve it again, and until you've got a solid five that feel true to you. This exercise may take some time to distill. It certainly did for me, so be patient. In my journal, I wrote that it's most important for me to be honest, both with myself and others, generous with my time, energy, and resources, loving to others and to myself, kind again to others as well as myself, and curious. Keep in mind that the qualities you want to embody might change. In fact, they may change quite frequently. Mine do. That's why I like to make a habit of revisiting this list at least once a year, to make sure I'm always tuned in to the kind of person I want to be, and living my life in a way that's truly aligned. Now, go through that list again. What qualities are most important to you in a partner? You might want all of them, but try to choose the five that are absolutely most important to you. For me, right now, the most important qualities in a partner are that they are loving, honest, open, adventurous, and intelligent. The qualities you desire in a partner are also subject to change. What's important to me these days is very different to what was high on my list in my teens and 20s. For example, back then, honesty wasn't something I actively thought about. It wasn't until the guy I was dating when I was 22 cheated on me that skyrocketed to the top of my list. Interests. Another important depth of your ocean is your interests. The things that inspire, delight, and fascinate you. This could include your hobbies, your passions, and any other area of interest you care about. Usually, your interests aren't as deep-seated as your values and qualities. They're the next layer up. There's usually more fluidity here, often dictated by age and stage of life. So, the things that interest you in your 20s may not be the same things that interest you in your 30s. And the things that light you up when you're a school student are likely not the same as the ones that fascinate you when you're a mother or a CEO. Take a moment to think about your interests. Grab your journal and answer the following questions. What is your favorite way to spend a weekend? What are you doing? Who are you with? What books do you naturally gravitate to? What sort of podcast do you listen to most? The Melissa Ambrosini Show, I hope. What topics could you talk about for hours? What topics do you naturally know a lot about and enjoy diving into? If you find yourself deep in an internet rabbit hole, what is the topic you're most likely reading about? Do you have any hobbies? What are you naturally skilled, talented, and gifted at? What do you spend most of your money on that other people might not? Do you do any classes or workshops outside of your career? On what topic? And if not, if you were to enroll in a class or a workshop, what sort would excite you? What are you passionate about? What have you said you have always wanted to do? For example, a photography course, study fashion design, travel to Mexico, something like that. If you're feeling stuck, here's a list of interests I came up with after canvassing some friends. In no way is this list exhaustive, but if you're struggling to identify and hone in on your interests, it might help get your creative cogs cranking. Astrology, astronomy, business, candle making, collecting things, cooking, craft, dancing, drawing, entrepreneurship, essential oils, fashion, fitness, gardening, health and wellness, herbal medicine, hiking, horse riding, interior design, kinesiology, learning a second language, mindful conscious parenting, music, painting, pets, photography, pottery, reading, renovating, singing, spirituality, sport, surfing, travel, writing, and yoga. When it comes to your interests, you can get as specific and granular as you like. Some people might say they're interested in music in general, whereas others, it's a particular type. For example, I have a friend who is absolutely crazy about a kind of music called gypsy jazz, which I had never heard of before I met her. But she can list loads of facts about it and listens to it every day. It's also totally okay if you don't have super strong interests. For example, you might enjoy your yoga class once a week, yet have no desire to get any more involved and would hesitate to actually call yourself a yogini. This is totally fine. Lots of people engage more generally in several activities rather than getting intensely into just one. Take a moment now to look over your answers. Are you surprised by any of them? Or did you know straight away what your interests are? My personal list of interests is extensive and includes things like health and wellness, essential oils, yoga, meditation, conscious parenting, cooking, hiking, camping, being in nature, living a toxin-free life, dancing and moving my body, gardening, conscious business and entrepreneurship. Your unique depths. We've now dug deep into your values, interests and qualities. Your answers to all of the previous questions make up the unique, wonderful person who is you. And hopefully they'll help you to see the water you're swimming in, particularly those aspects you might not have been aware of. Because you're so immersed in your own ocean of beliefs, it's easy to assume that other people share exactly the same philosophy and worldview as you do, particularly when it comes to your core values and the qualities you aspire to. They're so ingrained and normal to us that we assume they apply to everyone. On top of that, most of us also end up living in a sort of bubble too. An echo chamber where most of the people we associate with share similar viewpoints. And our own perspectives are mirrored back to us on a regular basis. It can be funny when you remember there's a whole world of different beliefs out there. Heck, even within your own social circle, there'll be a rainbow of perspectives, and that's part of what makes life so fascinating. If you have a partner, I highly recommend inviting them to answer these questions with you. Remember, everything is an invitation, and they may be open to it or they may not. All you can do is present the invitation with love and know that whatever happens is fine. When Nick and I were first courting each other, This stuff was all we spoke about. Intuitively, I asked him questions that revealed who he was at his core. What inspires you? What do you love to read and learn about? What books are on your bedside table? What do you dream about? At the time, I didn't really understand the importance of knowing your own ocean or that of your partner. It was just something I started exploring because it felt right and because I wanted to dive deep into this relationship. Your ocean can change. Water, by definition, is fluid. So your water might change, and that's okay. As mentioned earlier, even the staunchest believer can find themselves undergoing a personal watershed of change and evolution. It's all good. It's all perfect. You do you. Personally, I like to check in on all three of these elements: my values, the qualities that are important to me, and my interests at least once a year. New Year's seems to be a great time to do it, so that you can ride the wave of the fresh January energy and possibilities. Nick, Leo, and I have incorporated these questions into our start of the year family ritual. Along with mapping out our goals and intentions for the year ahead, we dive deep into our own ocean to make sure we're living our lives in a state of alignment and truth. For Nick and me, this kind of personal development deep dive is fun. We get excited by this stuff. But it's been particularly beautiful to see how much value and joy Leo gets out of this exercise too. So parents, don't be scared to invite your kids to join you on this journey inward. You may just discover unexpected things about your little ones. Firmness and fluidity in your ocean. At first glance, it might seem that you and your partner need to have exactly the same answers to all of these questions in order to be compatible. But that's not the case at all. Each of us is as unique as a snowflake. And just as you won't find anyone else on this planet with exactly the same fingerprint as you, neither will you find someone with exactly the same matrix of values, qualities, and interests. And to go in search of this would be a fool's errand. This means that when you come together with another person in a relationship, though they may share a lot of the same answers as you, there will most likely be points of differences too. Your job is to figure out which parts of your ocean you're willing to accept differences. That is, in which areas you're willing to embrace fluidity, and in which parts you require alignment. That is, the areas where you are firm. There are no right and wrong answers here, and no one can make this determination other than you. It's deeply personal, and figuring it out requires you to open wide, get incredibly honest with yourself and your partner if you have one, and be accepting of whatever comes up. As a general rule, values are likely to require significant alignment, especially any that you have a particularly strong belief system about. For example, for some people, religious values are an area of firmness. Their beliefs on this subject are so fundamental and important to them that they require complete alignment before a relationship is possible. For other people, religion might still be very important, but they do not require their partner to share the same values. That is, they are fluid and do not require alignment. For others still, religion may not be an important value at all. These people are likely to be fluid on this point too, not minding what their partner believes. The qualities you desire in a relationship are also likely to require some alignment. For example, If you care massively about having a partner who's trustworthy, honest, loyal, generous, and committed, while your date is looking for a partner who's fun, playful, adventurous, creative, and novel, you might find yourselves butting heads because you desire such different things. Your interests are likely to be the most fluid out of the three elements. There might be a particular interest you'd prefer to be able to share with your partner, but only you can decide if you're willing to be firm or fluid on this. Only you can decide if it's a deal breaker. For example, I have a friend who really needs to share the same interest and taste in music with any partner. She recently broke up with a guy because he didn't share her love for classical music. She is so passionate about music and it's such a big part of her life that she couldn't get past it. So she chose to be firm. On the other hand, I'm not so fast. Obviously, the fact that my hubby is a musician means that he has a massive interest in it. I like music, especially his, and I respect his love of music, and we happen to share a similar taste. But it wasn't a deal breaker for either of us, like it is for some. Remember, of course, this isn't about right or wrong or comparing yourself to others. It's simply about recognizing where you're going to be firm or fluid. It's also important to remember that in a relationship, it's possible to develop entirely new interests together, ones you've never cared about before. This can be immensely gratifying and can be the grounds for a really strong, fulfilling, and enjoyable bond. For example, our shared interest in gardening, hiking, camping, interior design, and service work only really took off when Nick and I got together. These are interests we have created and bonded over as a couple. Before that, neither of us was really interested in those things, and it's been beautiful to share these passions and watch them grow. Similarly, one of my friends never realized she had an interest in painting until she started dating a guy who was an epic graffiti artist, while another friend didn't know how to boil an egg until she started dating a chef. This ignited her passion for cooking. Take a moment now to look back over your answers to the questions we just answered. Which values, qualities, and interests do you require complete alignment on? And in which areas are you open to fluidity? I am firm in my values on health, money, and parenting in particular. It's very important to me that my partner is aligned with me on those topics, and our alignment there was one of the things that drew me to Nick in the first place. On the flip side, I'm much more fluid in my beliefs about religion and spirituality. Though I have beliefs and values in these areas, I don't require as much alignment and I'm willing to accept more differences, as long as it comes with respect. I'm pretty firm on the qualities I desire in a relationship too. I don't need my husband to prioritize exactly the same qualities as me, but I do need there to be some overlap and general compatibility. I mentioned before that my top five list of qualities I desire in a partner is loving, honest, open, adventurous, and intelligent. Nick's personal list is made up of soulful, nurturing, open, loving, and authentic. As you can see, though we've used different words, we're painting similar pictures. This is important to me and makes me feel like we're on the same page and shooting for the same star. When it comes to interests, as I've mentioned, I'm quite fluid. I love that Nick and I share a deep passion for meditation and we meditate together daily. But it wouldn't be a deal breaker if he wasn't into it. I love that we're both keen cooks, but again, it wouldn't be a huge deal if he didn't share my interest. We're also both very big on giving each other space to pursue our own interests. For example, Nick is passionate about rock climbing and surfing, and although I've tried both, they're not my jam. Similarly, I'm into pottery and dance class, and that's 100% not Nick's cup of tea. But we always respect each other's interests, even when we don't share them. And we consciously create space for the other person to pursue them. When you're looking for alignment, be sure to dive deep. Sometimes the way things appear on the surface isn't a reflection of how they truly are. One of my friends, Rosie, started dating a guy who worked at the local organic cafe she visited daily. "I was so excited when I met him," she told me. "I'd been waiting to meet someone who was as passionate about health and wellness as I was, and here he was." After a few chai-fueled conversations, it seemed like they had loads in common. But when they finally went on a date, it became apparent that his definition of living a healthy life was very different from Rosie's. For him, living a healthy life was a weekday thing, while on the weekends it was drinking, partying, and pulling all-nighters with his mates. When Rosie realized this, it felt like a big area of difference. "We had so many interests in common, yoga, surfing, traveling. He even loved visiting the farmers market, which made me think he was my dream guy. But he was still partying his pants off on the weekends and drinking himself under the table. My gut just kept telling me he wasn't the one for me, and I couldn't look past it." For Rosie, not being aligned on drinking and partying was enough to make her walk away. That was her truth. Of course, for others in exactly the same scenario, that might not have been a deal breaker. None of this is about judging anyone or figuring out what you should do according to some external standard or rulebook. This is simply about staying true to you. And remember, every time you ignore your truth, there is always a price to pay, and the universe will give you a metaphorical kick up the bum. Appearances can also be deceiving in the other direction too. It can seem at first glance as if you don't have many areas of alignment with someone, when in fact, you do. My friend Jacinta experienced this. When she first met her partner, Simon, it seemed that they were complete opposites. She was a nerdy, academically minded lawyer whose favorite pastime was reading and writing. He was a tradie who, by his own account, had barely made it through high school and hadn't picked up a book in 10 years. "I always thought it was important to me to have a partner who was university educated. That was one of the things I looked for when I was dating," Jacinta told me. "After all, education is so important to me. I wanted a partner who was intellectual and who valued education as much as me. And Simon did not fit that mold." The two had an undeniable bond, however, and just seemed to click. "The more I got to know him, the more I realized how aligned we were on the stuff that actually mattered to me. Family, friendship, loyalty, generosity, being a good person. I quickly came to realize that even though the surface layers of our lives look to be polar opposites, our hearts were beating to the same drum, and we cared deeply about the same stuff." Jacinta also came to realize that her desire for a partner who was university educated wasn't actually what she wanted at all. "When I dug beneath my own preconceived ideas, I discovered that whether or not someone had sat through 3 years of lectures and received a scroll of paper meant nothing to me. What did matter was that they were open-minded, curious about the world, and that they valued learning in whatever form. Because I'm so academic, I'd limited myself to thinking that those things only came in the form of someone who's book smart and been to university. I couldn't have been more wrong. It scares me to think that if I'd clutched onto that idea, I would have walked away from the love of my life, the man who became my husband. Jacinta's story is a potent reminder to open wide to all possibilities. It's easy to get caught up in creating a wish list of what you want in a future partner. I want someone who's blonde, 6 foot tall, who's a doctor or lawyer, and who earns loads of money. But getting this fixated in detail about jobs and looks might be shutting you off from being with a truly amazing person. The thing is, if you look beneath all of these desires, if you open wide and dig deep, you can often find the real quality or value you're craving. For example, if you think you want a partner who's a doctor or lawyer, it might be you actually desire to be with someone who values hard work as much as you do. Or you might actually be craving the quality of security in a partner. With this newly expanded definition of your true desire, you might be pleasantly surprised to find that this value or quality exists in an array of people, not just a tiny pool of professions. But what if we're not aligned? It's also super important to note that if you don't have alignment with someone, it doesn't mean you can't get together or that you must break up immediately. Not at all. This is where conscious awareness, letting go of expectations, and embracing acceptance are key. So, if you're on a first date and you're not seeing a heap of alignment, you don't have to slam down your clipboard, get up and walk away. Consider staying put and opening wide. Like Jacinta, you could be surprised by what unfolds. Of course, if your intuition is telling you to get the heck out of there, follow that, sister. It always knows best. Likewise, if you're with someone and you've just realized you're each swimming in water that's a little or a lot different, this could be an amazing opportunity for growth. Or it could be a sign that you're both ready for new horizons in separate paths. Only you can make that decision. Here are some strategies that may help you when it comes to lack of alignment. Open wide with each other. Now is the time to get vulnerable. Stay open and practice crystal clear communication. Let your partner know you'd like to talk openly and lovingly about this topic. Consider setting some ground rules before your discussion. For example, we don't judge each other for our values. We choose to speak to each other lovingly at all times. If we can't, it's okay if we need to take a break and regroup later. Dig deep to find the alignment underneath. Often it's easy to get hung up on our differences, even when there are acres of alignment between us. A funny example from the health and wellness world: people who identify as paleo and people who identify as vegan often have vigorous debates about which philosophy is better. When I see these arguments online, and they can get super heated, a part of me always wants to blow a referee's whistle and shout at them, "Guys, you've got far more in common than you do in opposition. You both think vegetables are the bomb. You both believe food is medicine. And you both believe in eating intentionally and responsibly. Let's keep that in mind, shall we? Then we might just have a constructive conversation." If you and your partner both value education dearly, but one of you wants to send little Mikey to a Montessori school and one wants to send him to a Steiner school, consider trying to identify all the areas of education you both agree on and starting the conversation from there. In these moments, it also helps me to remind myself that my husband and I are on the same team. This simple reminder shifts my perspective so I can more easily see the areas we agree on, rather than automatically jumping straight to conflict or defensiveness. Look for ways you can both be fluid. Constructive compromise, where you both feel like you're winning, can be a powerful way to deal with the lack of alignment. So, for example, if you can see that the two of you are not aligned with regards to money, maybe together you can come up with a strategy for how you're going to work through this issue when it comes up. Maybe he loves buying things while you want to save for your dream home. If that's the case, together you could come to an agreement to fulfill both your desires. For example, you both agree that he has X amount to spend per month on whatever he likes, but you both also commit to saving Y amount per month toward your dream home. That way, you both get to have what you want while allowing the other person to have what they desire too. It's a win-win for all. Do not bank on the other person changing. When it comes to values, qualities, and interests, people can change. They can evolve. They can expand. I have seen it happen, and I've done it myself. But to bank on someone changing or to try to change them yourself can be an exercise in frustration and futility. So if you decide to stay with someone even though you disagree on something significant, it's important that you're okay with the possibility that they may never change. Let go of your expectations and accept this with your whole heart. And you'll be able to sidestep a lot of suffering, arguing, and pain down the road. It's okay to take time to figure things out. You don't have to rush anything here, sister. You don't need to figure things out in your next conversation or in the next week. Heck, you don't even need to figure things out at all. Plenty of couples live in wonderful, fulfilling relationships despite having a lack of alignment in certain areas. Remember, there is no right or wrong. You are in charge of your life. You know your own self best, and you get to decide what's true for you. If you've encountered a true deal breaker, you don't need to explain yourself. If you're on an initial date and the person does something that's highly antithetical to your beliefs, like say they use a racial slur or they speak to a waiter like they're an idiot, or they call their ex-girlfriend a derogatory name, you're allowed to excuse yourself immediately or turn down the next date. You don't owe anyone anything, including an explanation, if you choose not to. In these instances, one of my favorite sayings is, "No is a complete sentence." So feel free to just say no, sister. No justification or reasoning required. Stay open to doing the work. As I said earlier, a lack of alignment does not mean the relationship won't work or that you need to end it immediately. What it does mean is that you need to open up to each other, fully listen with both ears, sit in a space of non-judgment, and treat each other with love and respect as you figure out your path forward. This is called working on your relationship. It takes bravery and guts to do, but when you're both committed, it can be one of the most incredibly rewarding experiences of your life and can bring you more joy and fulfillment than you ever thought possible. Key takeaways from Chapter 4. Just like the fish that doesn't realize it's swimming in an ocean full of water, Often we don't realize we're living our lives by a unique set of values, beliefs, and principles. Even if we're not aware of them, they still govern how we think, feel, and navigate through life, which means they also have a huge impact on how we show up in our relationships. Your ocean is made up of your unique values, qualities, and interests. These may change over time, so it's important to check in with yourself regularly to make sure you know where you're at. Your job is to figure out what parts of your ocean you're firm on, i.e. where you require alignment, and which you're fluid on, i.e. where you don't require strict alignment. There are no right or wrong answers here, and no one can make this determination other than you. Figuring it out requires you to open wide, get incredibly honest with yourself and your partner if you have one, and be accepting of whatever comes up. When you're looking for alignment with your partner or prospective partner, be sure to dive deep. Sometimes the way things appear on the surface isn't a reflection of how they truly are. That said, you're allowed to cut your losses and run, sister. You get to decide what's right for you. You are in charge of your life, and you get to decide what counts as a deal breaker. If you've encountered something you're not willing to accept, you're allowed to walk away. A lack of alignment doesn't mean your relationship is doomed. Far from it. It can be an exciting opportunity for growth. As always, the key to moving forward is to open wide, practice crystal clear communication, and commit to doing the work. Chapter 5. How to Have Rocking Relationships. As I touched on in Chapter 1, relationships are the highest stake games you'll ever play. And yet most of us don't know the rules. Despite the fact that we're in relationship to everyone and everything that surrounds us, we've never been taught how to navigate these dynamic energy exchanges successfully or with ease and grace. Relationships can affect every area of our life, our health, wealth, and our capacity to love. The result? Way too many of us have been flying blind our whole lives, not realizing that we could be experiencing so much more fulfillment and happiness in our relationships. If only we knew the first flippin' thing about them. For most of us, our idea of what constitutes a romantic relationship was formed by watching our parents. Your beliefs are mainly formed up until the age of 7 while you're a sponge, and what happens in those formative years shapes our mindsets and belief systems for the rest of our lives. So your cute little 2-year-old self, without even realizing it, was soaking up your parents' every word and action. Oh, so that's how you speak to someone. And that's what happens when you have an argument. And that's how you make up afterward. Essentially, your parents' relationship was your interpersonal training ground and where you formed your meaning and definition of love. This means that most of us are acting out close replicas of our parents' relationships, which may or may not be ideal. But don't worry. Though our relationship blueprint is strongly conditioned from childhood, it's not permanent. Nothing is. And your reality doesn't have to play out this way. So, if your parents had a less than stellar marriage, relax. You're not doomed. You have the power, if you employ it, to choose an entirely new relationship paradigm for yourself. Are you ready to find out how? You can experience relationships overflowing with love. It is possible, and it's your birthright. For most of my life, I entered all my relationships, not just with men, but friends too, with an unconscious intention, what can I get out of this? This was something I learned growing up watching my parents. Both my parents are divine human beings and I love them dearly. But they people-pleased, still do, because that's just what you should do, right? They gave a lot to others. Money, time, energy, food, a bed to sleep in, clothes. But there was always an underlying expectation that they would get something in return, even if it was simply a thank you or some sort of acknowledgement, which is all they ever really wanted. Then, one day, I read this quote from Tony Robbins. The only way a relationship will last is if you see your relationships as a place that you go to give from that place of love and not a place that you go to take. His words hit me like a ton of bricks and changed everything. Cultivating rocking relationships starts with you. Once you deeply understand and embody that, you're then ready to learn how to have rocking relationships with those around you. Jim Rohn famously said, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." In saying that, of course, we are our own being and can make our own choices. But research has shown we're more affected by our environment and the people in it than we think. Whip out your pen and paper and write down the five most prominent people in your life. This may be your partner, bestie, a colleague, your mom or sister. For me, it's Nick and four of my besties. FYI, this doesn't include your kids. I'm talking about adult relationships here. When you look at your list of five people, how do you feel? Are you excited, jumping for joy and feeling inspired? Or did you just have to pick up your jaw from the floor? If it was the latter, it doesn't mean you have to go and dump your friends, ditch your mum and break up with your boyfriend over text right now. This is about awareness. When you are aware of something and in the present moment, you can make inspired choices that are going to serve you and the good of all beings. If you were fist pumping when you looked at your top five, then great. I'm going to teach you how you can be of even more service to those relationships and how you can take them to the next level so that all your relationships are rocking. But first, if your jaw is still on the floor, I want to talk to you about creating space in your life for some other divine souls to enter. Creating space. Quantum physics has shown that everything is energy. Everything in the universe, all matter, including ourselves, is energy. From the device you are listening from to the chair you're sitting on, it's all energy. And the matter you choose to fill your space with matters. When you fill your space with something negative, toxic, or uninspiring, there is no room for anything else. For example, think of your stomach. If you fill up on white bread before you eat your veggies and protein, you're not going to have any space left for the nourishing main meal. But when you leave the bread out, you have plenty of room for what is going to truly nourish you, the veggies and protein. Same applies for the relationships in your life. If you fill your space with negative Nancys and Debbie Downers, then you have no room left for inspiring Ingra and happy Holly. The people and things we choose to fill our space with matter because they affect our life, health, and happiness. And if you're ready to call in rocking relationships, it's time to create some space so more amazing people can enter your life. As I mentioned before, this isn't about dumping friends right now over text. It's about bringing your awareness to how you feel when you're in their presence. Do you generally feel inspired, uplifted, and expansive in their presence? Or do you walk away feeling down, contracted, drained, and depressed? It's also important to note that, of course, inspiring Inga may not always be inspiring. Heck, who is? But what I'm talking about here is an overall general feeling when you're in that person's company. Tune into that. And if you walk away from an interaction feeling like the life has been sucked out of you, there are two things you can do. The first thing you can do is you can fully accept those relationships and the other party themselves wholeheartedly and unconditionally, full stop, end of story, and no more whinging or complaining about it or them ever again. Or you can decide to create some space within that relationship, not dump them, but hand it over to the universe. Ask the universe for some support and guidance on how to best handle this situation. Become aware of where you're placing your time and energy. And you can stop putting so much time and energy into those relationships that make you contract. Open yourself up for the new, inspiring, and soulful relationships to enter instead. So, my invitation to you is to be mindful of how you feel when you're with your five most prominent people. Do create some space if you need to, and open wide to the possibility that rocking relationships are coming your way. Drop your expectations. Expectations are the fastest way to ruin relationships. And if you want to experience rocking relationships, you have got to drop your expectations right now. As I've said, growing up in a very strict Catholic Italian family, expectations were par for the course. This attitude then carried over into my other relationships. When I first started dating, I thought the guy should text me all day, he should say yes to me, and he should make me feel a certain way. Sound familiar? Many of us should all over the place, and as you can see, I was a champion shoulder myself. But running around with a mental spreadsheet of expectations is not fun. Expectations set you up for disappointment and arguments with your loved ones. Instead, you could choose to have preferences that you hold loosely and don't get attached to. For example, you may have a preference that your partner takes care of dinner while you're working, that it's sunny tomorrow, or that your friend returns your call. If you expect all those things to happen, you'll inevitably wind up disappointed when someone or something fails to meet your exacting specifications. But if instead you hold on to them gently, sure, that's what I'd prefer, but either way I'm fine, then you can save yourself a whole lot of stress, heartache, and disappointment. When I find myself feeling disappointed, it's usually because I have placed unrealistic expectations on someone, of which they often had no idea. In that way, expectations are like setting yourself up for a lose-lose situation, when it's so easy to reframe it as a win-win. The other thing is, when you're hell-bent on your expectations, you close yourself off to things unfolding in other and maybe even better ways. It's like walking into a dark forest with one torch. If you only point your torch forward, that's the only path you'll see. But if you shine your light to the left and to the right, you may see another, quicker, more beautiful path you wouldn't know existed had you never looked. Let go of your expectations and open wide to the possibility of things unfolding in other, maybe even more magical ways. Stay open wide. When we have unrealistic expectations of how we think things should look, we close ourselves off to the miracles around us. For example, how many times have you heard someone say something like, "I'll only date someone who's taller than me." Meanwhile, you can see they're completely missing the gorgeous, caring 5'8" guy standing right in front of them. The same sort of thing often plays out in our friendships too. When you expect Tamara to call you back immediately after you call her, or to let you borrow her clothes, or to send you flowers on your birthday, you're closing yourself off to possibilities that are potentially way better, and setting yourself up for some serious disappointment in the process. Expectations and soulful sex. The bedroom is another place where expectations can be rife. There have been many times when I've been on my back, a man between my legs, and thought to myself, "What the heck is he doing down there? This feels crap. I'm so not enjoying this. Why is he doing that? Ouch, he's hurting me. Grr, I really wanted to orgasm, but he's so bad at this. I'm bored. What should I make for dinner? Again, ouch, dude. I should just get myself off. It's quicker that way." I would place a bucket load of expectations on how I wanted our lovemaking to unfold. For example, he would swoop me up in his arms, kiss my neck, throw me on the bed, touch my whole body, and we would have the most beautiful lovemaking session of our life. When it didn't go that way, I would roll over disappointed, annoyed, and unsatisfied. The guy would turn to me and say, "Everything okay?" To which I would reply, "Yep, fine." Which was a big fat lie. He had no idea and was completely unaware of the laundry list of expectations I'd placed on him and our lovemaking sesh. And every time we tell a lie or don't speak our truth, a seed of resentment is planted, which, if suppressed for long enough, will grow bigger and bigger over time. Instead, what I could have done in those situations was release my expectations, put my mean girl on mute, and get fully present. I would have then opened myself up to the magic of the present moment and practiced crystal clear communication so my partner had the chance to tune in with me. But because I had a long list of expectations, I closed myself off to it being any way other than what I had made up and planned in my mind. Who missed out? Me. Opportunity gone. Moment lost forever, and I will never, ever get it back. Giving and receiving love. When I was growing up, my mum would buy me clothes and little gifts to express her love. She was one of 8 children and didn't have a lot growing up, so she loved being able to buy me treats and trinkets to express her love. But to me, those gifts weren't what I truly desired. What I desired was quality soul time with her and physical connection like cuddles and kisses. I craved those moments when we would sit on the couch and drink tea together. To be clear, it's not like I was ungrateful for the gifts she gave me. They just didn't have the same impact as her sitting with me for 10 minutes and doing my hair. The way she expressed her love was different from how I like to receive love. Neither was right or wrong, just different. I then discovered the work of Gary Chapman and his 5 love languages. And what I then realized was that we all have a different way of communicating our love and a different way we love to receive love. So I asked 5 people how they love to express and receive love, and here's the result. Tash loves when her partner, or anyone for that matter, does thoughtful gestures for her. Things like making dinner so she can take a bath, picking the kids up from school so she can have some time for herself. She even loves it when she receives a just thinking of you text from her sister. Poppy loves verbal love. Phrases like, you're amazing, I love you, thank you so much for helping me out, I'm so grateful for you, really light her up. Tanya loves meaningful presents, no matter how big or small. A thank you note from a friend or a flower picked on the way home from work from her lover excites her. Amanda very much loves soul time. She gets so excited when her partner says, honey, I'm leaving work early so I can take you out to dinner. Or, baby, I've cleared our Saturday afternoon so we can go on a picnic. Or when her bestie wants to go out to lunch, just the two of them. I personally love physical, emotional, and spiritual connection. Growing up, I remember my mum tickling my back and stroking my hair before I fell asleep. I remember sitting on my dad's lap while watching TV and my parents hugging and kissing me a lot. And maybe I got it from them, or maybe it's innate, who knows? But my besties will tell you I'm a very touchy-feely person. So all those years my mum was buying me gifts to express her love to me weren't as powerful and meaningful to me as those precious moments of quality soul time and physical, emotional, and spiritual connection that we shared. When you understand how someone loves to express and receive love, you open yourself wide to deeper, more soulful connections, which is what we all desire. It's very handy that Nick and I both love physical, emotional, and spiritual connection. So we make sure we do that every day. But if you and your sweet have different ways of giving and receiving love, don't worry. Open wide and ask them how they love to receive love, and express to them how you love to receive it. It's important to note that you may love all the different ways to give and receive love, and that's cool too. Remember, there is no one right way. You can apply this to all the other relationships in your life too. When you're thinking about each of your friends or family members, try to work out or simply ask them how they love to receive love. Maybe your bestie loves little handmade cards from you, and your mum loves to hear you tell her how much she means to you. Understanding this will allow you to experience deep love. Leo loves soul time with Nick and me. Once I recognized that, I made some massive shifts in our home, which has deepened mine and Leo's and Nick and Leo's relationships. I now make it a priority that we both get soul time with him each day. That may look like 10 minutes of kicking the ball before school with Nick, or playing a game after dinner with me. To be honest, what we do and how long we do it for is irrelevant. What matters is that he gets that soulful time with each of us. What Nick and I realized is that when we make it a priority and we take 10 minutes out of our day to really play, be present, and adhere to how Leo loves to receive love, it not only makes his day, but he is a much happier kid. Inspo action. Write down how you desire to receive love and make time to express that to your lover, family, and friends. Bring it up at your next dinner party or ask your girlfriends how they love to receive love when you're next out to lunch. Not only is it an amazing conversation to be had, but it will deepen all your relationships. Write down how you love to express love. Find people who love to receive love in that way and go out there and give it. The world needs your love. Giving and receiving love in the bedroom. Knowing how your partner loves to give and receive love is a key ingredient for soulful sex. For example, because Nick and I both love physical, emotional, and spiritual connection, we know that's our starting point and a great way for us to seduce each other. We will mostly begin with physical connection, like a grounding massage or a full body tickle. But someone like Tash will get turned on when her partner runs her a bath, lights some candles, or even gives her a foot rub. Poppy, on the other hand, would totally get off on hearing, "I love you. You look so sexy. You're so beautiful." Tanya may love when her partner buys her some sexy lingerie. And Amanda loves it when her partner takes her away for a weekend sexcation. A weekend totally dedicated to soul time and soulful sex. Understanding how your lover desires to give and receive love is fun and will help you experience soulful sex because it allows you to be of service to them even more. Quit judging. Every single person you have in your life, or whoever you meet for the first time, is there to teach you something about yourself. There are no mistakes, and nothing is by accident. Everyone is your teacher and is there to take you deeper into yourself and to help you evolve to your full potential and to understand yourself better. But in order for that to happen, you need to have awareness. Otherwise, you will continue to point, judge, and blame everyone around you, hindering your growth. Every time we judge, you're stagnating your growth and blocking yourself from opening wide to deep love. Here are three major reasons we judge others. Number one, you are disowning parts of yourself that you have yet to fully embrace and own. A few years back, one of my then partner's friends, let's call him Ben, triggered the crap out of me. I couldn't stand to be in Ben's presence. I thought he was arrogant, loud, obnoxious, and annoying. For years, I judged him, putting him in the seriously annoying person box and avoiding him at all costs. Until one day, it hit me like a semi-trailer. I realized that all the things I disliked so much in Ben were actually present within me too. There were things that I had yet to fully own and accept within myself. That's why it triggered me so much. There were parts of me that were arrogant, loud, obnoxious, and annoying, and I was not fully owning them. Whenever anyone triggers us, there is a lesson in it for us. There are a bajillion different human traits, and we have all of them inside of us. So it's time to quit judging and own them all. It wasn't until I fully owned those parts of myself that I stopped judging Ben and no longer felt triggered by his presence. The second reason is you wouldn't tolerate that behavior within yourself, so you judge others. I once had a client, Michelle, who was very shy and introverted. So extroverted people really triggered her. She came to me with so much anger and resentment toward her sister. She said her sister was annoying, loud, and obnoxious, much like I felt with Ben. She shared a story with me that happened many years before that she was still holding on to. At her mum's 50th birthday, her sister got up and took over the limelight right in the middle of her mum's own birthday speech. Michelle was gobsmacked and couldn't believe that her sister had acted that way. She was disgusted and she said she would never act like that herself. If you can relate to this situation, this type of judgment might reveal a lot to you. It may be that you are not fully expressing your true self and are therefore easily irritated by people who are. And even though that person may express their truth clumsily, it triggers